B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who once described Caddyshack as an awesome documentary, Charlie Nance.
Hey, welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at CLT underscore golf guy. And today, well, today is one of my favorite kind of shows to do because we really cover the gamut. We'll begin in sunny San Diego, where Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer is covering the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines. Then we'll talk with one of the premier entertainers in country music today, Colt Ford. Now, before he did that, he was a professional golfer for 11 years, and his love affair with the game continues. And we'll wrap things up today with author Kevin Robbins, who's written a fascinating profile piece on Hal Sutton for Golf Digest and is about to release a much-anticipated book about the late Payne Stewart. So without further ado, to Cali we go in my conversation Wednesday with Ron Green Jr.
Hello.
Okay, so not since were you in Hawaii have I been more jealous of your location than mine. Describe the weather in beautiful, sunny San Diego right now.
Pretty darn good. It's nice. It's a little cool, but it was 39 degrees this morning. So, but it's supposed to be really great this the rest of the week. I think mid 70s, low 70s, and you know, it's kind of hard. You know, I mean, the sun is glinting so brightly off the ocean. That, you know.
God, I hate you. In years past, there's been issue with. Sometimes, and you mentioned how it was cool this morning in San Diego, you have those cool mornings with the fog and whatnot, and that tends to wreak havoc with people who have back issues. What sort of weather in the mornings are we expecting?
I think it's supposed to be pretty close to ideal. I mean, it's going to be, you know, probably 50 in the morning and 70 in the afternoon, but knock on wood so far, no mention of any fog or anything. There's a little breeze. I mean, it's not ideal, but it ain't far from it.
As always, when he shows up to the golf course, Tiger Woods is the story. But as opposed to the last 3 years that he's shown up for this tournament, the question isn't so much about his health, or is it?
No, I don't think so. I think the fighter jets overhead. You get a lovely dose of those out here as they practice. Very low, as you can tell.
you're being invaded by the cast of Top Gun 2.
I think that's Maverick and Iceman there right now. No, but I think, you know, the question for Tiger now, I mean, the expectations have changed. Even he talked about it. I mean, we know what he can do physically and where he is. And, you know, now it's about winning golf tournaments again. You know, this time last year, we were sort of watching and wondering and hoping and speculating on a bunch of stuff. Well, now we kind of know. I mean, it's been a while. I mean, you think back, what's it been, 3 months since he won the Tour Championship, which he hardly got to celebrate because the next day he's on a plane to France for the Ryder Cup and all that. And, you know, it's like a fresh start for him. Granted, he played the Hero World Challenge there, but this is different. I mean, this is a place he's won 8 times, you know, 7 of these Farmers Insurance opens, but now he's got to, you know, it's all set up for him to play a big full season. And he started at a hard place. I mean, the rough, they got all the rain last week out here. The rough is up and rich and dense. And I mean, these are 2 hard golf courses. So, but, you know, I mean, he's Tiger. I mean, that's one of the reasons everybody's here and great for the tour. The week between the conference championships and the Super Bowl, Jason Day and Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy and Tiger. Pretty good weekend of golf at Torrey Pines.
Physically, how did he look? The last time we saw Tiger Woods was at the Hero, and he still looked tired from the season. He played a lot more golf than he planned to. Does he look rested? Has he said if he's been playing much or working on his game much?
Yeah, he's been working. He feels good. He talked about how tired he got. He said really sort of lost it in his legs toward the end of last year because he never imagined he'd play 7 out of 9 weeks at the end. But he said spent a lot of time training and admitted, he said, I can't train the way I used to. I can't do the big heavy stuff that I used to do. He's got it sort of sculpted to what works for him now. And he sounded excited. I mean, he's been chatty and just, you know, talking about dealing with the new rules about being able to. He got into a long little thing in his press conference talking about diving again. He's able to free dive 180 feet deep, able to scuba dive again. He used to couldn't do that, and he loves it because he couldn't put the oxygen tank on his back, but he can do all that. He's got this whole different kind of life now, and he's very excited about it. Got some new clubs in the bag. Of course, pretty much everybody has something new this time of year. So I got the sense of great enthusiasm. Now, does that mean it's going to translate into him winning again this week? I mean, that's a big ask for anybody this early in the year. But, I mean, his starting point this year as compared to last year is miles ahead.
Deep sea scuba, that was on your list of activities to do while you were out there as well, 180 feet?
I'm going to leave that to him.
Ron Greed Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. You mentioned the course. For those of us that have now gotten just so tired of seeing wet, dormant Bermuda, to see the shots of Torrey Pine, where apparently fertilizer and grass actually work in unison and grow, you're right. It almost looks U.S. Open-ish in that main rough.
I think Mike Davis and the boys could probably let it go a little bit longer, but it's beautiful. I mean, it's like I said, the conditions could hardly be better, and it's so green and so summery looking. I mean, spring looking. It's just sun shining, and it's you're going to have the things you always have out here with the Poana greens is they grow a little bit late in the day. They get a little bumpier, and now with the new rules where you can sort of tap down imperfections, it'll be interesting to see how much guys do that because we all know that late in the day, Poana can get a little bouncy. So I think we'll be watching that a little bit just to see how guys handle that. But and it's if you need a golf fix, being here at Torrey Pines right now, it's good for the soul.
I'm glad you brought up the repairing of the greens. I had Kip Henley, Austin Cook's caddy, on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he speculated of all the rules that have come into play, that's the one that he thinks is probably going to be revisited, at least on the professional level. He says because places like Torrey and Pebble Beach with the Poe, and now that you can repair a footprint, because technically that's damage to the green, he says there are guys out on tour who are going to go bananas repairing things.
Well, Rory McIlroy was talking about that today. He said, I think, you know, you got to use good judgment because I don't think guys are going to be tapping down an entire path to the hole. But he says, I think it'll bear some monitoring just to see how guys deal with it. Because it's one thing when you're putting on those greens like they had out at Palm Springs last week, something else over here at Torrey Pines. As the weekend unfolds, especially if there's still some moisture in them from the rains last week, you know, maybe it becomes a little bit more noticeable than in other places. But that's just part of what we're going to see as this thing unfolds, and whether they adjust the rules later on, I don't know. I think everybody's still sort of in this learning phase, sort of seeing what it is, how everything operates. I mean, like even Tiger said, he had to take one drop the other day playing a practice round and had to remind himself to do the knee-high thing and talk about how weird it felt.
It's going to feel weird for everybody. Ron Greed Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. One name and face who is not at Torrey Pines for the first time in more than 20 years is Phil Mickelson, who I think surprised himself at how well he played last weekend. And had it not been for an unbelievable second shot by Mr. Long and a clutch putt, Phil Mickelson may have won for the second time in a few months.
Yeah, I mean, before we get to Phil, I mean, what Adam Long did.
Oh,
What a finish that was, and to do it against those guys and in that situation. It looked like he'd done it so many times before. I mean, I think somebody said he was, in his career, he was 20 over par on the PGA Tour, and then he shot 26 under last week and changed his life in so many ways just by doing that. But, yeah, I mean, Phil was right there to win. It is a little different not to have him here given his San Diego roots, and you would think it's just an automatic when you're looking at your schedule. You just play the hometown event, but he's made it clear in recent years that he doesn't love what they've done to the golf course and how it sets up. And, you know, he wants to bomb it and hit it as far as he can. And here with the rough the way it is, it's not necessarily playing to a strong suit. So he's also talked about shutting down his schedule a little bit, rolling it back a tournament or two here and there. And this is one of them. I mean, he likes to play Phoenix and Pebble, and, you know, he just played Palm Springs. So I think, you know, this is you want to call it a casualty. This is the one that's going to go on without him. But the tournament itself is not suffering at all in terms of field. I mean, this is obviously the best one of the year so far. But, yeah, it's strange not having Phil here.
Ron, I don't know how many years ago it's been, but this tournament used to be that you went really low on the North course and then you held on the South course the first 2 days of the tournament. But the North course was redone. And like I said, I can't remember how many years ago it was. It's tough now, and this is really a 2 day grind to try to get to the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like one's a breather and one's a beast. It's they're both challenging. I mean, you know, in the South course, the one we're all familiar with, we watch them play the Open here, and you've seen it for all these years on TV because that's where the weekend part of the tournament is. But, boy, the North course, you talk about views. I mean, it is just spectacular in places. I mean, you get down by the water, and you just kind of want to stand there and look at it, and it doesn't get the love that the South course does, and it's not quite as big and mean as that one. And it was a good thing because you'd hate to have to play two of those because, I mean, it is the South course is really – I mean, that demands a lot of a player, but this is talking with some guys this morning, talking about how, like, for where we are, this is the kind of place. I mean, it's like a bucket list place. You could come play 36 holes out here a couple days in a row, and you just feel like you know, got so much out of it. Just the views and the sense and the feeling, and just how gorgeous it is here. And a buddy of mine who works for the newspaper out here, lives here. He said, you know, as a San Diego resident, he comes out here, and I think he says he pays $42, puts his bag on his shoulder, and goes and plays 18 holes. It's a pretty good deal there.
That's a heck of a deal. Ron, you brought up Phil's schedule, and I love the term you use, that Torrey Pines is a casualty of scheduling. I get a sense that this may be a common theme with a lot of players as we go throughout the season with how it's compact now, and especially once we get to the TPC. I mean, we are TPC, Augusta, PGA, U.S. Open, Open Championship with World Golf Championships in between. Players that we normally see play the same tournaments each and every year, some of those guys aren't going to show up.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of sort of piecing together right now. Rory was talking about it, and now, especially now that he's sort of made this his focus, the PGA Tour, and where he's going to go. He said, I could see playing 7 out of 8 weeks after the Masters through the U.S. Open into that time frame. He said, because there's so many big events. I mean, you've got World Golf Championships starting to sprinkle in with Mexico City and the match play coming up. The Players' Championship is not that far away. I mean, it's, you know, middle, latter part of March. I mean, it'll be here before we know it. And, yeah, there are tournaments that some players want to play that they're not going to play now. Phil's an example here. I mean, Tiger, basically see how he picks his spots. I mean, is he going to play? You know, last year almost won Valspar. Probably not going to play it this year because of the way the schedule falls.
I wonder if he plays the Honda, even though that's a home game.
Yeah, I my guess is he ultimately will, but I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't. I mean, that's a place that, a lot of things can go bad down there if it gets going the wrong way. But it could be very similar to what Phil has done here with San Diego and Tiger living down there. I think they're guys who are going to have to make some big decisions. I think in our case, with Wells Fargo being 2 weeks before the PGA Championship and, you know, whatever, 3 weeks after Augusta, I mean, it's in a position where I think it's going to do very well. I think it's going to have a really good field. It's going to be a tournament that fits just right for a bunch of guys.
No question. No question about that at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think there'll be some guys who skip it because everybody skips some, but it will be, I like their chances of having a very good field in Charlotte.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. Get you out of here on this. We talked about him ever so briefly, and that was Adam Long. A career journeyman they listed the number of tours. If there's a tour in the world, it seems that he has spent some time on it. I think his career PGA tour earnings last week, going into last week, were something like $8,800. And with one putt, he makes $1.065 million. That's the kind of story you guys dream about writing with what you do. Can you ever remember another story like that?
Derek Ernst.
Yes. I forgot about him.
Yeah. Well, since then, he's given us reason to.
Yeah.
Speaking of now playing all sorts of different tours. But, yeah, it happens once in a while. But, I mean, that was, I'm not sure – I knew who he was beforehand, you know, and then to go do it and play like that. And I mean, sometimes it just falls to a guy, you know, the other guy, the familiar guy, suddenly makes a bogey or a double or something weird happens that they back up and the guy you never heard of is left holding the trophy almost. Not this way. I mean, golly, I mean, he pitched it in whatever 15 or 16, then he hits those shots coming down the stretch, and that shot in 18 off that downhill side hill live, but that water,
That's as good as it gets right there.
That was really, really good. I mean, I thought summed it up perfectly, that little clip of Mickelson when he makes the play. You see Mickelson just mouth the word, wow. Yeah, it was a wow moment.
That's Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer. And when we return, one of the premier entertainers in country music, Colt Ford, takes dead aim at his 11 years as a pro golfer and his ongoing love of the game that continues to torture us all. Presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Colt Ford is one of the premier entertainers in country music. Go to just one show, promise he'll make you a believer. Last night he played Coyote Joe's in Charlotte, and beforehand we had the chance to talk about his extensive life in the game of golf. Okay, let's go back in time a little bit. Before there was Colt Ford the musician, there was Jason Ferris Brown from Athens, Georgia, who loved the game of golf. How did you get introduced to the game, and when did you start playing?
My dad introduced me to it when I was young. I'm at 5 or 6 years old hitting balls, and then I just excelled at it, you know, really early. I was scratched by the time I was about 13 years old. My dad did a lot of coaching American Legion baseball, and he played professional baseball a little bit, so baseball I love too. I had scholarships in golf and baseball, and I played everything in high school, basketball, and then so football, I played it all. But in golf was the one thing that drew it to me the most was I couldn't lose because somebody else messed up. I mean, it was all on me. There's nobody else to blame. It was, you know, I could, you know, in baseball, I could throw a one hitter and somebody could make one error and we can lose 1-0, you know, and it's like, man, that I just couldn't stand that. So I chose golf and I was able to do it for a living for a long time. And it's a great game. And I think, you know, it's with some of the stuff that's going on now with Top Golf and things like that, it's introducing some people to the game that may not have been part of it before. And it's cool. It's cool to watch it go and still go play in some of these celebrity events and still compete a little bit. It's fun.
You know, it's funny that you bring up, and I was just sort of taken aback just now, because what you said was almost verbatim what I remember my son saying when he was like 10 or 11 years old, and he told me he didn't want to play baseball and he didn't want to play basketball anymore. And I said, well, why not? And he looked at me and he said, because I don't want my winning or losing to be in anybody else's hands but mine. And he was 10 or 11 years old when he said that. And when you just, and I was taken aback. I wonder how many people in the game of golf got into it that way, that was their outlet of, look, it's me and that's it.
Maybe, I mean, you know, maybe some have been down that road. I think the thing we're seeing today with kids is they're focused on one sport so early. And I quite honestly, I'm just not a huge fan of that. You know, and I dealt with it with my son with the travel baseball, and all of a sudden it turned into a year-long thing. And I don't know that it's not hurting kids more than it's helping them, to be quite honest with you. You need to play other sports. You need to do other activities and not just one thing all the time, all year long. I just, you know, you're going to have your chance to do that when you're an adult, when you got to get up and go to work every day.
Oh, no, Colt, I completely agree with you. You know, you and I grew up in the same era. In the fall, you played soccer, football, and then you played basketball in the winter, and then you played baseball in the spring. And baseball season usually ended right around the time the school let out. And then we had this thing called summer vacation where you just were a kid.
Right.
And that those days are gone with the wind.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying all those programs are bad, and for some kids it's probably really good. But I do think as a whole, we're getting carried away with the travel baseball and soccer and you know, to just too much of one sport all the time. I just don't think that's good for any young kid. Let them play a bunch of different things. You know, maybe you're good at this one, you're okay at that one, maybe you're not so good at the other one. But I mean, it builds character. And I'm not a everybody gets a trophy kind of guy or dad. I mean, I don't think you're doing a kid any favors by saying, you know, hey, you win when you lose. I mean, when they're real little, that's fine. But as you get older, that does not prepare you for life. That's not how it works. I mean, nobody gives you, when you go to work and you don't do good, nobody comes in there and goes, that's all right, still gives you a paycheck. You might get tired. So I think we need to, you know, there's nothing wrong with learning to lose and lose gracefully and figuring out which way is the best way for you to be successful and go do that.
Musician and entertainer Colt Ford is our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's get back to golf for a second. When you walk on a stage, you know I'm the baddest mother trucker on the planet tonight, and y'all better get ready. You have to have that mindset. Athletics at the highest levels, not that much different. When was the first time that you walked on a driving range and you knew you were the best one out there?
Well, there's no question. I mean, I worked for Dr. Rotella, Bob Rotella, sports psychologist, for early 20s when I turned pro in golf, and you have to think that way. There's nothing wrong with being cocky. Just don't be a jerk. I mean, you have to be confident. You have to think when you step up there that I can beat everybody here. And if you don't think that most of the guys that are successful in any sport or any business or anything, that's how they think. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be a jerk and you know, be ugly to people, but you have to think that you're the best there and you can beat anybody. And when I was, you know, when I got up to 14, 15 years old, 16, I mean, I thought I could beat anybody. I mean, that don't mean you do it all the time, but you at least need to feel that way when you step up there.
Did you play golf in college?
I did, yeah, I did.
Where did you go to school?
University of Georgia.
That's not a shabby golf program by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I mean, I was a college All-American, and I've won probably a dozen or so professional golf tournaments around the world, and I used to play pretty good.
Oh, God.
Again, you're just kind of, you're a couple swings away or a putt away from, you know, playing for $1 million every first prize or not that much, but it's a fun game. It's a great game. It allows people to get involved in a lot of different businesses. There's a lot of things done with the game of golf that you can't do with other sports, and you can also play it, you know, long into your life versus other sports. So it's a very neat game and special to me.
Let's talk about your professional career. You were on the Nationwide Tour, what is now the Web.com Tour. You talk about a tour that we've seen progress from the Hogan Tour to the Nike Tour to the Nationwide Tour and now the Web.com. Guys on the Web.com can actually make a living now.
No question. When I started playing, actually, with the Hogan Tour, you know, when I first came.
Yes.
And I meant, like, any mini tour golf. I mean, if you broke even, you were really playing you were golfing your ball. I mean, it just wasn't the money. I mean, and now, again, like on the mini tours, you can hardly make a living. And I mean, now you can. I mean, now guys can actually stay out there on the web, get some experience, and actually make a living and put some money in their pocket. And, you know, it was way harder when I was playing, way different. But the players are all still just as good. I mean, they're coming out younger, better. They're a little less afraid. You know, there's nobody scared. These kids come out now, they can beat anybody at any age. There's, you know, used to be you get out and you get on tour and it takes you a few years and you learn where to stay and you learn where to eat. You learn where to, you know, travel and all that stuff. And then you start, maybe you win. And now guys come out there and like, yeah, I can win the first time I tee it up. And they're not afraid. It's pretty amazing.
Colt, do you think at the end of the day that may be Tiger Woods' lasting legacy to the game of golf? Is he, all these guys who are out now, they had him on their wall and they saw how he did it. And that he came out absolutely fearless at 20 or 21 and said, hello, world, and here I come and get you. And you know, that's the way all these guys are now. These guys coming out of college, they're ready to win and ready to win now.
No question. it really is incredible how mature they are at a young age now with their playing abilities. The guys used to be intimidated, and quite honestly, on tour, I met some guys that were great players and great friends of mine. They may never admit it, but there was a time when Tiger Woods stepped on the tee that they knew that everybody knew that you could not beat him, and they were a little bit intimidated and afraid, and that doesn't. I don't think you have that anymore about any guy in particular anymore. I don't know that we'll ever see that again with somebody like that. Although you may see it again with him, there's still that aura about him like, oh, wow, that's Tiger Woods. I mean, but so it's good to see him, what we saw in Atlanta with him at the Tour Championship and him playing good again. That's only good for the game.
Absolutely. Colt Ford, musician and entertainer, is our guest taking Dead Aim. You were on the mini tours for you know, about 10 years or so. At what point did you say, I can't do it anymore? Or was there an injury? Or was there something that happened? Or did you just say, I just don't know if I'm going to make it?
Well, again, you know, there's always that belief, like, just, you know, again, you're one. And when I was playing, you could qualify in school and get your tour card. Now you have to go through the web tour to get it, which I think is probably a good way to do it. But, you know, it's just you just get frustrated. You miss putt here and there. You know, it just – I don't know that I ever thought that I couldn't make it. I just got to a point where it was like I did have some injuries and I had a couple things go wrong, and it's just expensive to be out there. And I didn't have – you know, my parents could only afford what they could afford. And then it got to a point where I needed some other sponsorship money from, you know, you have to get a group of guys together. And I was able to get a little bit of money, but not enough to really keep going. So at some point you just have to go, hey, I got a family to raise and I got to figure out a way to get a steady paycheck. So that's, you know, sometimes life just gets in the way and you got to make the decisions based on what's best for your family. And that's what I did.
Now, Colt, I realize that many times you and Brad Pitt are mistaken for one another, and that you have
that's why I wear the cowboy hat,
and that you have this amazing visage of a male model and cover model for GQ.
Right.
That being said, I have always thought that with the way you look and the way that you golf your ball, there's no telling how much money hustling golf you could have made. Did you? Let's come clean now. Did you ever do just a little bit of hustling?
I still do just a little bit of hustling. you can't help it sometimes. Some people just, you know, it's cost some people quite a bit of money to find that out. But I mean, a lot of times it's their own fault, you know. I mean, it's not my fault you didn't do the research. You know, you asked, did I want to play? And I said, sure, you can stand on your head. We'll play for whatever falls out. You know, I mean, like, so I'm lucky to be able to put a few dollars in my pocket because of that. Yeah. I normally only get one shot at it.
That's it. Cool.
A couple of my buddies are like, I'm going to bring you here. You know, we'll bring you in a 10 handicap. I was like, are you friends with these guys? Because you may not be at the end of this round, you know, so it's fun. Golf's a great game. And it's a game where I'm friends with a lot of different athletes. You know, I played golf with Ray Allen last Sunday in the celebrity event. It's like, I can't go out and have a fun game of one-on-one with Ray Allen. That's,
yeah.
I mean, it might be fun for him, but it won't be fun for me. So golf is one of those sports where, because of the handicaps, it allows people of all different skill levels and everything to play. And, you know, if you can't play 18, you don't have time, go out and play 9 or go to the Top Golf driving range. Let the kids just hit balls, let them have fun, and see if they pick up the game.
Well, I'm also a big fan of short courses that are being built. The Pinehurst, one that they've done in the past couple of years, the Cradle, I'm telling you, at 780 yards, it's the most fun you will ever have. And people who have never picked up a club before could have fun doing it. I think that's a future for golf, too.
Well, I do. I agree with that a lot. You know, I mean, again, finding ways to get out there and play, just play some holes, be outside. You know, enjoy, I mean, golf course scenery. I mean, I got the AT&T Pebble Beach coming up in a few weeks, and you go, I don't care if you've never played golf at all or anything. If you walk one foot on Pebble Beach and don't realize how special that place is, I mean, you don't have to have played at all to enjoy that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's, you know, I'm trying to do all I can to help try to continue to grow the game. We just did the event with the LPGA players. anything I can help. I've been talking to Golf Channel about doing some announcing, which would be fun. And, you know, I love the game, and I want to continue to play and as well as I can for as long as I can.
Colt Ford is our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's talk about those two pro-ams that you mentioned. You were down in Florida for the LPGA's Tournament of Champions, the Diamond Resorts Tournament. I didn't realize you played with Ray Allen. I saw some video of him on the range. For a tall guy, how silky smooth is that guy's swing?
It really is good. I mean, it really, Ray can really play. He takes the game seriously, but he doesn't get bent out of shape about it. But he's a very, very good player, plays a lot. You know, and it's tough on taller guys. But, you know, a lot of the athletes are very big guys. Smoltz won and Mark Mulder, a lot of the pitchers and stuff, they're just so big and they hit it so far. There's half a dozen guys on the that I play celebrity golf with that hit it further than everybody on the PGA Tour. I mean, you can't believe. I mean, you're throwing guys out there that are 6'5", and now they have a good golf swing, and they can swing at 125, 30 miles an hour. I just can't do that. I have to, you know, beat them by not making big mistakes.
Colt Ford is our guest taking Dead Aim. So let's talk real quick, and I'll get you out of here on this, the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. This is the holy grail of Pro-Ams to go play in. How many times have you done it?
This will be my fifth or sixth, I'm trying to remember, year. And it's absolutely everything they say it is. It's just a phenomenal event. It's ran unbelievably. I mean, Steve John, who runs it, is just phenomenal the way they treat you. I mean, in being inside the ropes with the best players in the world and some, you know, incredible celebrities and athletes and, you know, and the fans, they have 2,500 volunteers that make that thing go. So it is a huge honor and a big deal to be a part of it.
Who do you play with?
You know, I've moved it around. I've played with a couple of Georgia boys. I mean, Chris Kirk, who played golf at Georgia that I used to help some in college. And I played with Scott Brown, who's an Aiken, you know, South Carolina guy. I played, good Lord, who else have I played with? I played with Brian Gay, who's also a Diamond Resort ambassador like me. We grew up playing junior golf together. And last year we finished 9th or 10th, and he finished like 8th in the tournament. And I played with Billy Horschel. Which is odd, Brian and Billy both.
I was going to say, Georgia and Florida, y'all are able to coexist?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Man, why did I play with two Gators? But they're good guys and good friends of mine, and I think I'm going to be back with the Bulldogs this year, so it looks like it'll be fun.
All right, so I don't know if it's Tuesday night or Wednesday night that is that big party. I've talked with Jake Owen about this, where all of a sudden you look to your left or to your right, and you're like, holy crap, that's Clint Eastwood. What is that moment for you that you've had at that party where you looked to your right or your left and said, oh, my gosh?
Yeah, it's that was my dad's guy. So, he, you know, as a kid, that was my dad's guy, that's my guy. So I remember meeting him the first time. Very few times have I been completely awestruck. And without a question, being with Clint was one of those times. I mean, and I got to play with him as his partner in the Celebrity Shootout a couple of years ago, and it's just, yeah, he's the guy's iconic, you know, he's iconic. And, again, you stand up on a stage and you start realizing, like, you know, you don't have to like Kenny G, or maybe you don't like the horn music or whatever, but the guy sold 100 million records, you know. I mean, and there's Huey Lewis, and there's just all these unbelievable artists and people there, and it's just, you know, it's kind of blows your mind at times to realize that. But I try to spend every second I can, every volunteer I see, I try to tell them thank you and I appreciate what you do. None of that stuff works without them. And I'm just humbled and lucky to be a part of it. I don't know what else to say. It may sound a little corny, but that's just the way I feel about all of it.
Is there an extra lump in your throat when you've got a putt after Clint Eastwood has given you that look of Dirty Harry like you better not miss?
Oh, man. And the little shootout thing is an alternate shot deal. So just a little funny story. Nick Faldo, Sir Nick Faldo, I guess, was caddying for Clint when he was my partner. My fiddle player, Justin, who is from, you know, rural Missouri, was caddying for me. And at one point, Clint asked Nick to hold his beer, and Nick kind of made a big deal about it. And my caddy, I can't tell exactly what he said. He was like, "Being right, come on, you got to be kidding me! It's Clint Eastwood. Hold the freaking beer." I was like, "Easy, Justin. Don't get us kicked out of here." But in his mind, he was like, "What do you mean, Nick Faldo? You hold the beer. Shut up. It's Clint Eastwood." I mean, Sir Nick Faldo does not trump Clint Eastwood. I'm sorry, not here in America. Anyway.
How great is that story? That is the one and only Colt Ford. And up next, author Kevin Robbins takes dead aim at his fascinating piece on Hal Sutton for Golf Digest and his upcoming Payne Stewart book, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Kevin Robbins is the author of that great book a couple of years ago on Harvey Penick and an upcoming one about Payne Stewart. Earlier this week, we had the chance to touch on that, but more pressing, his recent piece for Golf Digest on Hal Sutton. I find Hal Sutton a really fascinating individual, and I was kind of surprised that no one's really written a piece about him in a long time to this point. This is a guy who I think I still remember the Sports Illustrated cover in 1983 when he won the PGA. It said, "Bear apparent." He looked like Jack Nicklaus. He had a brilliant first act to his career and a brilliant last act to his PGA career, and then he sort of fell off the map. How is it that you came across Hal Sutton?
So we live in the same state, and I was a newspaper reporter when he made his return to, well, he made his debut on the Champions Tour in like 08. And he came to, Austin had a stop at that time, and he came to it. And again, like you, you know, I'd noticed that he hadn't been around. So, you know, I approached him early in the week about writing about where he'd been and what he'd been thinking about. And he was unusually candid and blunt and accessible. And that was my first encounter with him. And I was sort of smitten with him, to be honest. You know, I know that that's kind of against the rules, but he was just so refreshingly blunt. And I'm not sure he's always right, but he has something to say and he sticks to it. He's a natural storyteller. I don't know where that comes from. And he gives like effusive answers to questions. And that was unusual. I've been a sports writer for a while, and it's unusual. So I wrote about him in 08. And then when I did my Harvey book in 2012, he as a boy, he and his father flew over from Shreveport to work with Harvey one day. So he had a little set piece in that book. I did a story for Digest last year about guys who'd only won one major. So I got him on the phone for that. And then this Payne Stewart book that I'm working on, he's a big part. He's maybe the major secondary character in this book. So I went down to Columbus to see his place and to do an interview for this book. So just like, I guess to answer your question, what I'm saying is four times I happened to be involved in a story he could help me with, and he always did. And so when Golf Digest asked me if I could, you know, possibly do this, I thought, well, of course I can. You know, Hal's almost like something more than an acquaintance and something short of a friend. And so that's how it happened.
Author Kevin Robbins is our guest taking Dead Aim. He's written a brilliant piece on Hal Sutton that's in Golf Digest. You can see it on golfdigest.com. I had a sneaking suspicion it had something to do with the Payne Stewart book, because one of my great lasting memories of Payne Stewart is at the press conference following the 99 Ryder Cup at Brookline, when people started asking individually about players on the team, and he just piped up and said, Hal Sutton is a stud. And he just thought the world of Hal Sutton. So I assume it was a mutual as well.
Yeah, but it evolved over time. They because their last names start with the same initial, they often locker near each other at tournament stops. They really aren't very similar people. Payne and Hal weren't.
Oh no, Hal's not the effusive, gregarious person that Payne was.
No, and he's not much of a showman, and he's more cautious about what he says than Payne was. But what happened, Charlie, was at that 99 Ryder Cup, that epic Saturday night when Crenshaw wagged his finger and talked about fate, and then he went to the team hotel, and the team meeting that night. It just went to a place these players don't normally go. It was really, really, really interesting talking to players who were there that night for this book. O'Meara, Lehman, Davis Love, Justin Leonard, Ben, of course, and Hal. It started, you know, everybody's down and not feeling very good about the way, you know, the U.S. team was down 10-6. Nobody had ever come back from that deficit to win the Ryder Cup. But to a man, gradually, players went to a really private, kind of sacred place in that team meeting, and Payne talked about his father, who had been dead a while. His father had not seen Payne win any of his majors, any of his three majors. And he looked over at Mark O'Meara and he said, you know, Mark, you're really fortunate. Your dad was able to see you win your majors. Mark had won the Masters and the British Open the previous year. And Hal was really good in remembering that night in particular. And Hal talked about how in golf, you know, even in a team environment, players don't want to be too candid and too honest and too self-reflective. It scares them. It's like a weakness. It's like admitting weakness, and you don't want to do that against somebody you compete against each week. But that night, everybody did. And that's where Payne and Hal took their relationship to a much more profound level, as much as Payne Stewart could do that. They were the last two people, the last two men awake that night. They drank. Everybody went to bed. It was Payne and Hal. They made promises to one another. They promised each other that when it was their turn to be the captain of the Ryder Cup team, that the other man would be a co-captain. Payne invited Hal to go fishing with him. Payne had never ridden a horse. Hal invited him to his horse ranch. Let's go ride a horse. They made these pacts with each other, the things they were going to do that they never got to do.
Kevin Robbins is an author of a great piece in Golf Digest on Hal Sutton. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's talk about Hal Sutton's school right now. I remember a Robert Duvall movie that came out. In fact, I think it was even shot in the Hill Country of Texas several years ago, called 7 Days in Utopia. And Robert Duvall played this grizzled old golf mystic who sort of saves a guy's putting stroke. And when I heard about Hal Sutton's school and started to read about it on Twitter, and he even, you know, posted a few things, hey, come on down and let me work with you, whatever. I had this image of someone driving up to a dusty driving range somewhere in Texas, and all of a sudden there's a sign that says, you know, here lies PGA champion from 1983, Hal Sutton, and this old guy out there just banging balls. What is that school like, and how has that sort of rejuvenated his attitude and passion for the game?
Yeah, that's really good territory to talk about. It's not like Utopia. It's a big ranch in Columbus, Texas, about midway between Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, and Austin, right there in the middle. It's out in some pasture land. It's got some roll to it. It's mainly an exotic game hunting ranch where people can pay a lot of money to come out and have guided hunts for exotic game or white-tailed deer, pheasant. And there are some fishing ponds there, too. And there's also a 9-hole golf course. It's a short course. It's really nice. Chet Williams, who designed Whispering Pines, the number one course in Texas, he designed the short course. And then there's Hal's school. It sits on a ridge. It's a nice, modest building with a range on one side and a golf course on another, a putting green. Inside is basically a temple to Hal Sutton's golf career. It's like walking through his own personal museum. His Ryder Cup bag is there with the clubs he used in 1999. Clubs from other championships that he won, trophies, books, in a pro shop. And then there's Hal, and he's like the proprietor of the place. He's got a partner, a really nice guy named Chase Cooper. He used to play college golf and mini tour golf, and now he's a teacher. And Chase brought the technology, and Hal brought the old school tough love. And they work with rising serious golfers, mainly kids from Houston who are on high school golf teams who want to play college golf and beyond. And Chase provides the numbers and Hal provides the common sense. And that's what they do. These two men seem to work together really well. They're a bit of an odd couple in age and their opinions on technology. Although Hal's a bit of a convert. He was skeptical first of how technology could help golfers become better. But, you know, Charlie, numbers don't lie. And that really had something to do with Hal's return to golf, because he was seeing improvement in his students the way Chase Cooper, his partner, was using technology, you know, radars and TrackMan and sensors. And so Hal started messing around with it, and a combination of that and being around young people again who reminded him about why he loved golf so much as a boy. And then, you know, Bruce Litsky, who was a co-captain on that 99 Ryder team and a peer of Hal's, Bruce died this last summer from brain cancer. And Hal went to his funeral. And there they were, all the guys Hal had grown up playing with. And he hadn't been around them for a while because he kind of left the tour and was doing his teaching thing in Columbus. But Hal told me, you know, they approached him and said, "Man, we miss you out there. We want to see you again." And I think that prompted Hal to start thinking about how he left golf. He had that heart attack in 2014 in Naples. Didn't really play much after that. He let himself.
He let himself go, and he also had some other injury issues. Hasn't he had a hip replaced as well?
He's had both hips replaced.
So he and Curtis Strange are now completely bionic.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, there's part of that too. Hal feels rebuilt. He feels not only re-energized and re-inspired, but he feels rebuilt too. And you're right, Charlie. He had let himself go, and he'd gained some weight. And when I saw him to do the Payne Stewart interview, the last Payne Stewart interview I did with him, which was about a year ago, you know, he didn't look good. And then when I saw him right before Christmas for the Golf Digest story, I approached his facility and I could hear somebody whacking balls in one of the bays, and I turned the corner. There's Chase Cooper, and there's somebody hitting balls, just smoking seven irons with a nice draw. And it didn't dawn on me initially that it was Hal. It didn't look like him. You know, I was looking at an athlete, and it was Hal. He lost like 45 pounds, that square jaw's back, and he looks good.
That's great. Author Kevin Robbins has written a great piece for Golf Digest. You can see it at golfdigest.com on Hal Sutton. There's an interesting quote that opens, or really is sort of a subtitle of the article, and it is, "He's returning to golf so that he can quit the game correctly." What is Hal's end game? What does he want to do, and how far does he want to take it? Is this a one-off thing? He wants to, you know, get healthy enough to qualify for the U.S. Senior Open, make a run, and then walk away again? Or what does he want to do?
There's the question. Not even he could answer that, or at least he wouldn't to me. I'm honest enough to admit to myself that maybe he knows the answer to that, but he just didn't want to provide it for the record. But I don't know. You know, it goes back to how he ended up leaving the game. I think he felt embarrassed. He felt unfinished. He felt incomplete. And, you know, he's no stranger to returns. And he wanted to make another return to, as you said, and as he said, to quit the game correctly. I don't know exactly what that means. I'm not sure he knows exactly what that means either, but he wants it to feel right, and I think he wants it to feel complete. And maybe it's one of those things that where he knows it when he sees it. I don't know. I don't think it means winning. We talked about that. I'm not sure that he's got a burning desire to win, but I think he does have a burning desire to see what's left, to see what he can do before his body tells him that it's time to quit, you know, for good. Like everybody has to at some point. Jack had to. Arnie had to. Tom Watson's going to have to. Hal Sutton's going to have to. But I think he wants to go out and see what he's capable of before that time comes.
Well, you know, I have a theory that the golf gods allow their great champions one last walk in the sun. I really do. I mean, Nicklaus had the Masters in 98. Watson had that unbelievable run in Turnberry you know, several years ago, where he almost made where he almost made history. On the Julie Inkster was able to turn back the clock at the Women's Open on Saturday at Pinehurst here a few years ago and shoot a 64 on the weekend. Hogan's running what 67 or 68 at the Masters on that Saturday, his last stand. All the great ones get that last walk in the sun, and so it would not surprise me one bit, even if it's not a win. But if Hal Sutton got one last great walk in the sun.
I hope so. I think a lot of people root for somebody like Hal Sutton because he has not had an easy go of it in golf or in life. And he's been knocked around a bit. The 2004 Ryder Cup captaincy was a mess. He takes responsibility for that to an extent. But, you know, he's got an everyman quality to him, even though he's a rich kid from Shreveport. He's been knocked back. He's gotten back up. I think that's a good example to a lot of people. Plus, who can forget in 2000 at the Players Championship?
Be the right one today.
Be the right club today. And I mean, that's a mantra. And he was the one guy, Charlie, who was not intimidated by Tiger Woods. He was not afraid. And I think that people admire that out of him, too. So I think people root for him on a lot of different levels. And I hope, I do. I'm not ashamed to say it. I hope that he can make a run. I hope he does it on a hard golf course in a major. I hope he does it against somebody like Tom Lehman or Colin Montgomery, a big name. And then we'll see, won't we?
Get you out of here on this. Author Kevin Robbins is our guest taking Dead Aim. It's been mentioned in passing, this Payne Stewart book you've been working on. I first heard of it. We made contact on Twitter on a different subject about a year or so ago when you were working on it. I'm dying to read it. When is it coming out?
It'll be published in the fall, in October. It's nearly in production now. I'm glad you're eager and excited about it. I am too. I just think it's a rich, rich story for our time. I think we needed 20 years to really examine what 99 meant to Payne and to golf. I mean, the overlay of this story, it's very coincidental, but Payne Stewart's last year of life and arguably his best year of golf coincided with a tectonic shift in what was happening in the way golf was being played and who was playing it. And the book's called The Last Stand of Payne Stewart. It's the last stand of Payne Stewart's generation. Guys in their 40s and 99, guys like Hal Sutton and Tom Lehman and Mark O'Meara and Payne, this was their last season of relevance. Of true relevance. They had all won their majors. Hal's a bit of an outlier because he went on to win the Players the next year. But everybody was pretty much done. And that was because their way of playing golf was pretty much done. In 99, Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and David Duvall, they were hinting at the kind of golf that we're seeing Brooks Koepka and Rory McIlroy play now and Dustin Johnson. So those guys, those older guys like Payne, they were seeding the stage to the next generation.
I am really looking forward to that Payne Stewart book. That's author Kevin Robbins. I'd also like to thank country music's Colt Ford and Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer for their time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered today, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Also, a great way to stay in the loop with us is to be a regular consumer of our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Currently featured there are articles on Jim Nance's crazy U.S. Open prediction, in my opinion. A documentary coming out on caddies that's narrated by who else? Bill Murray. And a legendary Tiger Woods gambling story involving Mark O'Meara. Hey, weather-wise, it'll be cold, but it'll be playable for getting you golf on this weekend in the Carolinas. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy. And I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.